Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Arthur Garrett Boglio Sr., Marion Bonita Bratt, Barbara J. Cotton, Peggy Moore Darnell, Araceli Larios de Sassina, Paul Samuel Dickman, M.D., William Lewis Emshoff, Daniel Joseph Ennis, Peggy L. Foltz, Stephen Dwayne Foster, Joseph Andre Jelinas, Daniel Frank Grub, Margie Hamilton, Charles William Hogan, Donna Rose Hornshire, Elizabeth P. Jenkins, Timothy Allen Kerr, Kathleen McKillop Long, known as Casey, Jeffrey Dobbs McKeever, Kristen Meyer, Daniel E. Miller, Arthur Joseph O'Connor III, M.D., William Gilbert Palacio, known as Bill, Leo Palmatier, Dr. David B. Piller, Mary Frances Connor Ragsdale, Henry Charles Richter, known as Hank, Anne Rikina, David Ropp, James Sager, Jerry Seppinen, Roger Tanner, Dylan Blaze Williams, and Penny Wilson. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the people listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. The article in this section of the paper was written by Russ Wiles, the columnist. It's entitled, Thinking About an Annuity? Pros and Cons. If there is one financial concern that millions of Americans share, it's anxiety about running out of money in retirement. Annuities are designed to address this fear by providing a stable stream of cash flow that you cannot outlive. Mutual funds, especially those focused around stock investments, play a potential role by offering a path to greater returns than the annuities might provide, with more flexibility. But neither of these options alone has solved the basic worry about outliving one's income and assets. Well, could they do a better job if they were combined? That's what some financial companies are trying with relatively new funds that incorporate annuities in various ways. A new report from investment researcher Morningstar examines the trend of combining annuities with target date funds, which hold investments that grow more conservative as your retirement gets closer. For example, a typical growth fund might hold stocks more or less permanently, but a target date portfolio usually would start out investing entirely in stocks, and then over the decades it would gradually move into bonds. So what does a fund annuity combination look like? Over the past few years, roughly a dozen fund groups have incorporated annuities with target date funds in an attempt to provide investors with more income in retirement. These target date funds are looking to succeed where others have fallen short by including insurance against running out of money in the form of annuities, according to the Morningstar researchers. But these new products are complex, and they charge expenses on top of those for the underlying target funds, and those costs are not always transparent. They tend to run lower for funds that use straightforward income annuities compared to more complex variable annuities the latter of which might add 0.5% up to 1% in additional yearly fees. Variable annuities can hold a range of investments, including stocks, and they include other features. Now, with the more straightforward income variety of annuity, investors can lock in an income stream based on how much they invest, the current interest rates, and other factors. For example, a $200,000 lump sum placed recently into an income annuity would qualify for a payment of about $1,200 a month for life. For people already considering annuities, the new target date funds might be attractive, as they choose the annuity so that investors don't need to sort through myriad complicated options. But that's where the simplicity ends. Morningstar views the complexities of these entire combined products, along with other often hefty fees, as drawbacks. One financial firm, Empower, has dropped the annuity option owing to lackluster investor response. Now, that possibly reflects confusion, Morningstar added. But other companies and brands offering the new target funds, they include BlackRock, Nuveen, SSGA, AllianceBernstein, and Lincoln Pathbuilder. Well, where do you stand on an annuity checklist? The Morningstar report also highlights considerations to help determine whether you need annuity protection, whether combined with a target date fund or as a standalone option. So here are 8 of those factors. First off, income replacement needs. This considers the amount of your yearly income that is already covered by a pension or other annuities or Social Security and so on. Perhaps you have plenty already. Well, if not, an annuity can help fill the gap. How about wealth levels? People who have accumulated hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, often can afford to tap into these assets as needed in retirement, making an annuity unnecessary. Conversely, people with little in the way of savings might not have enough money to purchase an annuity. Then there are the spending guardrails. Some people live paycheck to paycheck because they spend all of their available cash. Now, if that describes you, then you might benefit from the discipline that a monthly annuity payment provides. Are you comfortable with investment decisions? You see, if you don't like to figure out where to invest or how to allocate your assets among stocks and bonds and so on, a target date fund with annuity exposure could help. Target date funds, by nature, allow an allocation mix that gradually shifts from aggressive to conservative as your retirement nears. And then there's the anticipated life expectancy. Running out of money might not be a problem for people who don't live into their late 70s, 80s, or beyond. And that's why it is wise to assess your life expectancy, given your health, family history, and other factors. The longer you expect to live, the more an annuity can make sense. Then there's income and risk comfort. So if you worry a lot about running out of money, then an annuity could be a good choice, if only for the peace of mind, Morningstar said. Flexibility needs. Conversely, if you don't know how you might spend money in retirement, or how much, or when, it might be imprudent to tie up your assets in an annuity. And then finally, there's other retirement goals. Running out of money isn't the only consideration. Maybe you want to spend down your assets and leave a sizable bequest or an inheritance or have some other considerations. Annuities can ensure that you have a regular cash flow to spend, but that could conflict with these other objectives. So Morningstar's take on the new genre of target date funds with annuity options is mixed. The report credits the investment industry for trying to solve the running out of money dilemma. But the new funds are complex and can be confusing, with higher fees and less personalized choices that you could make on your own. And that was the article by Russ Wiles for the Arizona Republic entitled Thinking About an Annuity, Pros and Cons. Well, we're at about 10 minutes past the hour. We're going to move on over to the sports section now. On the front page of the sports section of the paper, there is no article. It's just a full-page composite picture. And at the top of the page, in big, bold red letters, it says, Sunday Huddle. And then below it are five baseball players. And below those five baseball players, it says, His Legacy Lives On. And then the subtitle is, Jackie Robinson's Legacy Still Inspires Today's Black Pro Baseball Players. Now, the article that goes with this picture is located on the interior of the sports section on page 5. But I thought it was kind of interesting to see the five players that they have put a composite picture of. Because some of them have bats in their hand. Some of them have gloves in their hands. There's J.P. Crawford, Samad Taylor, Ryan Bliss, and Lawrence Butler. And then there's Jackie Robinson down center in the picture. So let's go to that article now and read about what's on the front page of the sports section. This article is entitled, Black Participation in Major League Baseball is Low, but There is Hope for Future. This was written by Jose M. Romero for the Arizona Republic. This year is the 20th anniversary of the first Jackie Robinson Day across the MLB, where all teams pay tribute to Robinson at games on April 15th. The commemoration has gone from one player asking to wear number 42, that was Hall of Famer Ken Griffey Jr., to more players following suit, to now every player, coach, and manager on April 15th. Robinson's number is retired all across the MLB. The Arizona Republic spoke to four black baseball players at spring training in Arizona this year about the legacy of Robinson, and here are their comments about his legacy. J.P. Crawford from the Seattle Mariners said, One man can change the world. All the adversity and crap he had to go through, I don't think a lot of people could tolerate that. He did. He changed the world. All the interracial couples, don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for him. Honestly, we wouldn't have these jobs that we have, wouldn't have these opportunities that we have today if it wasn't for him. This man is incredibly important to our life, our society today. Ryan Bliss for the Tacoma Rainiers, who are the AAA Mariners, Ryan said this, It's definitely a sense of pride to wear 42, knowing that he was one of the pioneers to pave the way for me to play and be in this game and to make this something I want to do with my life. You know, it's really an honor to wear that jersey. And it just shows you all the enjoyment and respect that we have for Jackie Robinson. There's not as many minority players in the game today, and definitely wearing that and having that day shows the younger generation and shows myself that we can do this. This is something we can do, and more people should have opportunities to do it. Samad Taylor for the Tacoma Rainiers, also they're part of the AAA Mariners. Samad said, Just to be able to put a jersey on my back and chase my dream, it means a lot. For him to help make everything easier for African-American ballplayers, I mean, we can't ask for anything better than that. If it wasn't for him, my life wouldn't be what it is. I'd probably be playing a different sport. But this is the sport I love. He stood on all 10 toes and accepted everything that was thrown at him and never gave up. And by him never giving up, that puts us in a better position. I salute them. I always salute him. Never had the opportunity to meet him, but that's somebody that if I did, if I was able to have a conversation with him, that conversation would never be forgotten. And then we talked with Lawrence Butler from the Oakland A's. He said this, puts the bat on the ball, steals bases, plays hard on defense. The majority of the players do that now. So watching him I didn't get to watch him play, but I just saw some of the highlights and stuff. And you kind of take away things from this guy. According to the Institute for Diversity and Ethics in Sport, about 6% of MLB players identified as black or African American at the start of the 23 season. That's a record low since 1991. When the Institute first started collecting such data, the number of black players was at an all-time high of 18%. After Robinson and Larry Doby in the 50s, the 60s brought the peak of the careers of future Hall of Famers like Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Bob Gibson, Roberto Clemente, Ernie Banks. In the 70s, there was Reggie Jackson, Lou Brock, and Vida Blue. They were huge names. In the 80s, that brought Ricky Henderson, Andre Dawson, Bo Jackson, and Dwight Gooden, among others. Barry Bonds and Tony Gwynn, Griffey and Tim Raines, they were there for the years when there was more black players than any other decades, the 1990s. But now the numbers are down. But there is a belief that they will rise again because of the growth in participation among black youth players, many of whom are being developed within MLB's player diversity pipeline of city leagues. Butler from the Atlanta area said the number of black players will go up based on what he's seen coming from his hometown. He said, it's actually getting bigger and bigger each year because a lot of my friends from Atlanta, I want to say like six or seven that I grew up playing with, are about to be in pro ball, or they're about to be in the major leagues, or they're there already. Just in Atlanta, our city is kind of huge on minorities playing baseball. We have a lot of black players playing pro ball in college. Taylor said players like the dynamic Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Miami Marlins can inspire the next generation of black players. Taylor said, there's a lot of us out there, a lot of us out there making noise, and we're here to kick the door down. That's all it is. And that was the article, Black Participation in MLB is Low, but There is Hope for the Future. Our next article about in the sports section is on the second page of the sports edition, or the sports section. It's entitled, Sports is Always About Transition. There is the transition from one season to another. In hockey and soccer, constant transition from offense to defense and back. It's the flow of those sports. The NBA even has statistical categories that track and measure transition offense and defense. But here at the Arizona Republic, we are embarking today on a transition of our own. The Sunday newspaper that you are reading has a new look and feel, and the sports section is part of this transformation. Built on visually grabbing imagery and strong local journalism, that shows off the depth of our coverage of the most important teams, personalities, and developments in Arizona sports. The goal is to have this newly imagined product work in tandem with our website, azcentral.com, the go-to home of breaking news and live sports coverage. The Sunday newspaper experience will complement all of that by showcasing the expertise of our staff, spending time with stories that both look ahead and celebrate our shared past. It will be full of opinion, strong feature writing, and team analysis. It will be a Sunday magazine of a sort, a place to spend some time leaning into a topic or exploring the rich history of Arizona sports. This transition has been a long time coming, right? Regular readers of the Republic understand that night events and live coverage is not something the print newspaper can own any longer. And really, there's no reason for it, not with our vibrant website and our social media footprint that reports in real time everything sports fans are looking for. This is also part of the transition, giving print readers tools to quickly access our digital content via QR codes. We believe this tip-off edition of the new Sunday Republic shows off what you can expect every weekend. And as we introduce this new experience to you, there is one more transition I need to share. This edition is the final Sunday paper under my watch as sports editor of the Republic. I am retiring after being just shy of 44 years in journalism, the past 21 here in Phoenix, where hopefully I have helped make sense of the evolving scene in one of the greatest sports towns in America. There simply is no place that comes close to matching what we have here, even if our pro teams underachieve much of the time. Since arriving in the fall of 2003, I have been involved in the coverage of 6 college football championships or semifinal games, 4 Super Bowls, that includes the Cardinals in 2009 at Tampa, 4 NASCAR Cup championship races, 4 WNBA finals, the NBA finals, the World Series, the Pac-12 football championship game, and All-Star games for MLB, NBA, and NFL. Add to that the Cactus League and the best-attended golf tournament in the world, countless bowl games and pro playoff runs, and a robust local high school and college sports scene. Whew! Well, it's what brought me here in the first place, this steady lineup of events that regularly puts Phoenix in the spotlight. But what I didn't expect, and what became the ultimate benefit of working here, was how great the people are, both in my professional and personal lives, and how utterly amazing the West is to experience. It was hanging out in Flagstaff when the Cardinals spent summer camps up there. It was seeing the Diamondbacks play at 3 of their NL West rivals' ballparks, and Denver, you're next. It was seeing the Coyotes play in L.A. and Anaheim, and visiting Camp Tonizona, site of Arizona State football's annual pilgrimage. Being a newspaper and a website sports editor has been more thrilling a ride than I could ever have imagined when the first opportunity came along nearly 35 years ago. I had been an NFL beat writer covering the New York Giants from the Bridgeport, Connecticut Post, but that ended as the company moved into a new direction. The publisher called me into his office and said they had a new position for me, sports assignment and layout editor. Well, I thought about it for a moment and replied something to the effect of, "Isn't that what the sports editor does?" Well, he smiled and said, "I'm pretty sure this was a test to see how I would handle the transition." Well, there's that word again. In less than a month, he went all the way and appointed me sports editor. In all the years that have transpired, I never lost sight of the fact that our job is to connect readers with the teams and the sports they love. We have insider access they can only dream of. And even in this 24/7 era of content generation, where teams have virtually opened their doors more than ever to the public, what we do still matters. How we report and analyze the news, how we interact with readers, it remains vital to the sports arena. We're still independent. We do not root for anything other than good stories to tell or great personalities to cover. Oh, sure, having the local teams win is great, because it brings more readers and fans to us. So if the Suns are going to be in the playoffs, we might as well hope for them to go all the way. You hear retiring athletes talk about the thing they'll miss most is being with their teammates, and it's the same for me. The people we meet and work with make all the difference in our lives. For me, it's a very long list of folks who made this journey so special. Being amazed and challenged by amazing journalists at the 3 newspapers where I have worked, getting to know athletes, coaches, and administrators along the way, and even forcing relationships with constant readers, as Stephen King calls them, people who just don't complain when we get something wrong or don't cover a story, but want to understand what we do, and they offer constructive feedback. I'm here to tell you, we wouldn't want it any other way. From here on out, I'll be joining all of you on the sidelines. No, that's not quite right. With our friends at the Republic and AZ Central showing the way, we have front row seats and insider access to the good, the bad, and everything in between. Otherwise, you can find me on a hiking trail or at a national park, wherever the mood takes me. As Johnny Cash once sang, quote, "From now on, I'm free to do what I desire," unquote. See you at the ballpark. And that was the article, Arizona Republic Sports and Sports Editor Transitioning, written by Mark Faller, F-A-L-L-E-R, columnist for the Arizona Republic. Our next article is Valley Fever, No Match for Rising FC Captain, by Jose M. Romero, about the Arizona Republic. It's all about soccer. Last November, after Phoenix Rising FC won the USL Western Conference title with a 2-1 win over Sacramento Republic, John Stenberg began feeling sick. The defender, who arrived in August when he was recalled from loan to Östers, a club in his native Sweden, was a key part of Rising FC's rise in the latter part of last season. And in early November, with the league championship match less than a week away, Stenberg faced the possibility of not playing. Stenberg said, "I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't drink. I was drained. I felt body ache, headache, everything. So I didn't practice the whole week between the conference final and the championship final." Well, at that point, Stenberg didn't know that he was dealing with a case of Valley Fever, or that it would affect all the way into Rising FC's start to its 2024 regular season in March. Stenberg found the strength to travel on his own to Charleston, South Carolina for the biggest game of his career. The morning of that match, he said he felt so badly he didn't recognize himself in the mirror. Sick and weakened with what he thought was just a bad cold or flu, Stenberg scored the tying goal in the 90th minute that sent the match to extra time and penalty kicks. Rising FC won, but Stenberg could not even celebrate. Feeling dizzy and as if he was going to faint, he wound up resting on a trainer's table as the team celebrated in the locker room. Now, initially, Stenberg started to feel better. He took a vacation with his girlfriend. Sometime after he returned to Phoenix, joint pain began. And that's when doctors were able to diagnose him with Valley Fever, a fungal infection that comes with many of the symptoms that Stenberg felt. It's a common illness in Arizona and the desert Southwest. Recovery times can vary. Stenberg took an off-season visit to Sweden. There, his symptoms worsened and required hospitalization. Doctors, who never dealt with Valley Fever because Scandinavian countries have much different climates, had to rely on Stenberg sharing information in order to treat him. He said, "Basically, I just told him what it was and what I went through here in the States." So after they took care of it themselves, obviously they're doctors and know a lot, so they knew that it was something called the Valley Fever, and then they just took care of the rest, you know, looking it up. And they also contacted the hospital here. They made sure that they knew what was going on. Stenberg was limited when preseason training began in January. He was not fit to play when the season started. It's just a matter of time before he's back on the field. Stenberg said, "After this journey that I had this off-season, I'm just so happy to be here. You know, I'm just smiling every day. I'm coming here, you get to play soccer with these guys, I get to do what I love. So I think sometimes you live and you learn, and I've definitely learned to appreciate every day, trying to stay on top of it. And right now, I'm healthy and I'm ready to go." Stenberg was named team captain. It's a testament to his character. Rising head coach Danny Stone said the team has missed Stenberg's leadership and composure and experience in the beginning of the season with 2 losses and a win. Coach Stone said it's one of those almost fairy tale stories, one of those kind of movie moments where a player that has had that situation going into the final week just not just makes it through the game, but of course has the moment in the 91st minute where he scores the equalizing goal. It was an incredible thing to see. We know what we have in this person. We know what we have in this player. But we're respectful, and we are conscious of making sure that as a professional athlete, we take care of him, and that when we bring him back in the right way. And that was Valley Fever, No Match for Rising FC Captain. Well, we're at 30 minutes past the hour, so we need to move on over to the viewpoint section and read some opinion pieces. The first one is entitled A Wrong Way to Protect Arizona Judges from Political Backlash, written by Abe Kwok, a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It is time for Arizona to rethink retention elections of judges. The issue gained urgency this week following the Arizona Supreme Court's decision upholding the 1864 nearly total abortion ban. The decision supercharges this fall's election races, including the retention of two justices who were part of the 4-2 majority in the case. It'll surprise no one if activists use it as a campaign to oust them, a dangerous and misguided campaign that would undermine judicial independence, for which a solution seems readily at hand, except for one highly questionable element that might very well doom it. Senate Concurrent Resolution 1044 would ask voters to abolish retention elections for judges in superior courts and those serving in appellate courts, including the state Supreme Court, except for a few circumstances. That's most notably instances when the Commission on Judicial Performance Review deems a judge unfit for office. Now, that resolution has cleared the Senate and the House Committee on Municipal Oversight and Elections. It is a proposal with merit, mostly. Judges should not face job vulnerability for simply doing their job of interpreting and applying the law, even if it results in a hugely unpopular decision. And historically, they had not. But we've reached a point in our politics that no one gets spared of retaliation. Already, much has been made since Tuesday's ruling about former Governor Doug Ducey's expansion of the High Court to 7 members from 5, and his appointment of the 4 justices who voted to uphold the 1864 ban. The implication being that the ruling was driven by politics, when, in fact, the judges had simply carried out their duties. One of the dissenting justices took pains in her opinion to acknowledge the blowback that controversial social issue cases like this one would generate for the court. She emphasized that the vehement disagreement with her colleagues is about what those laws mean, not because of ideology. Now, Arizona judges' increasing vulnerability in retention elections is not mere conjecture. In 2022, Supreme Court Justice Bill Montgomery earned meet standards votes from an overwhelming majority of the Commission on Judicial Performance Review, which is a panel of judges, attorneys, and public members that pores over surveys and comments from jurors, witnesses, and attorneys. He won retention by only about 10 percentage points. In Maricopa County, where he had served as county attorney before his court appointment, he actually lost by a couple of percentage points. Now, Montgomery recused himself from the abortion case following a firestorm over his public criticism and opposition to abortion as county attorney, including an inflammatory comment that he posted on social media. In that same election, voters ousted 3 judges, 2 of whom had garnered more meet standards votes than do not meet standards votes. And until then, only 3 judges had lost retention in the 40-plus years the system has been in place. Well, that's to say that even judges who got a favorable evaluation from the commission have become susceptible to getting the boot. So Senate Concurrent Resolution 1044 would insulate judges from that precariousness. But the problem with the proposal is with its application. Sponsors of the bill decided to attach a retroactive provision that nullifies all of the results of the November election should the measure pass, regardless of whether voters approved the judges for retention or ousted them. In other words, it would shield all judges, including the 2 vulnerable Supreme Court justices, from removal after the fact. Well, never mind the intent, but the optics are terrible. It lends credence to the belief that conservatives introduced a Trojan horse to rescue the justices their party helped install. So SCR 1044 already suffers from partisanship. No Republican has voted against it. No Democrat has voted for it, even though this provision was not a point of their opposition. It's regrettable because the proposal otherwise deserves bipartisanship. It would shield the myriad judges who upheld the election process as much as the Supreme Court justices who upheld the Territorial Day's abortion ban. Protecting judicial independence is worthy of support regardless of political affiliation. An Arizonan should at some point be given the opportunity to grant that protection. But Republicans would be best served to pause or amend the bill and not test the will of the voters, else they'll reap the whirlwind, indeed. And that was Abe Kwok's opinion piece entitled A Wrong Way to Protect Arizona Judges from Political Backlash. Our next opinion piece is written by Joanna Allhands. She's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, Abortion Ban Also Applies to Miscarriages, Like Mine. My first pregnancy, with identical twins, was not viable. I learned at 10 weeks that I would eventually miscarry. In fact, my doctor told me my body was starting the process already. At that time, in 2014, I was driving an hour each way to work. We all decided it was much safer to end a very wanted pregnancy, predictably, at home, so that there was no risk of me hemorrhaging at work, or even worse, on the road. I was prescribed misoprostol to begin the process. And yet under that new, old law of the state, this option is no longer available. In 2 weeks, the Arizona Supreme Court has ruled an 1864 near-total ban will be the law of this state. And it plainly reads this, quote, A person who provides, supplies, or administers to a pregnant woman, or procures such woman to take any medicine, drugs, or substance, or uses or employs any instrument or other means whatever, with intent thereby to procure the miscarriage of such woman, unless it is necessary to save her life, shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 2 years, nor more than 5 years. Unquote. I doubt few doctors would be willing to risk their license, much less their personal freedom, to balk such a clearly stated rule. And no, I can't even imagine how much more difficult that will make conversations in obstetricians' offices across the state. I remember how emotionally wrecked I was, how I felt like I had somehow failed my babies. But I at least had an option to grieve this privately, without having to go into work for days or weeks until my body began the miscarriage on its own. Now, many women, regardless of how they might feel about abortion, now they don't even have that. There is no good estimate for how many women miscarry each year. Some say 1 in 10. Others estimate it's more like 1 in 4 pregnancies may end in a miscarriage. However many it is, I bet it's far more than the number of abortions that occur in Arizona each year. And if nothing else, it makes what happens next a whole lot clearer. Even if some voters might prefer Arizona's now ixnayed 15-week ban to a proposed constitutional amendment preserving abortion rights, almost no one is arguing to keep that draconian 1864 ban. Some now argue that if Republicans have any sense of self-preservation in mind, they would either pass or refer a competing measure this fall to strike the 1864 law and reinstate the 15-week abortion ban, this time with exceptions for incest and rape. Who knows how that will play out, or how deep the political fallout might be. Either way, the 1864 ban's days are numbered. The consequences are simply too great to let it stand. And that was Joanna Allhand's opinion piece, Abortion Ban Also Applies to Miscarriages Like Mine. And now we'll read some opinion pieces written by people like you and me in the section called Reader Views. The first letter goes like this. Long ago, I had the privilege to serve as the first student member of the Board of Regents. It is because of that background that I view the circumstances of the University of Arizona, from which I hold 2 degrees, with great sadness. Nor do I suspect that we have heard the last of the revelations that will continue to rock our faith in the U of A or the Board. That will all play out with a fair process and continued excellent local reporting. Instead, we should focus on how to keep this from happening again. First, the failures of the current UA administration are so severe that the president must go now, not in 2 years. Second, I hope the new regent appointments made by Governor Katie Hobbs will be speedily confirmed by the Senate and bring skills critical to the mission of investigation and rebuilding trust between the various constituencies, including academic, student, and community. And third, it is long past time to put an end to the expensive competition between our universities. There was simply no need for U of A to buy an online institution to compete with ASU's excellent program. Let's turn our focus to the fix and the future. Signed, Andrew Federhar in Phoenix. Bans on abortions are not about helping babies. It is about limiting women's roles in society to what men think women should or should not do. If Republicans really cared about children, they would work toward improving education for all children, no matter their zip code. If Republicans cared about children, all children would have automatic access to health care, regardless of parents' income. By government limiting women's roles to broodmares, it also sets the stage for the government coming for other rights that women have. Just wait. They'll come for your checking account next because if a woman isn't capable of making decisions about her own life and family, she surely can't be trusted with financial decisions. Signed, Patricia Leba in Phoenix. The Environmental Protection Agency recently strengthened national air quality standards for particle pollution. Such pollution poses serious risk to our health and can be deadly. Even brief exposure can worsen symptoms for the roughly 174,000 children in Arizona with asthma. Fortunately, stronger standards will result in fewer asthma attacks, heart attacks, and strokes. And this is especially important in Phoenix, as our city has some of the country's worst air, per the American Lung Association's State of the Air report. Stronger standards mean that many polluting industry sources must use modern pollution controls to reduce their air pollution. Because of this, polluting industries are pushing back with false and misleading claims about these life-saving standards. This rule has the potential to prevent 4,500 premature deaths and alleviate 800,000 cases of asthma symptoms in its first year of full implementation. The bottom line is that the stronger particle pollution standards will save lives. Still, there is more work to do to ensure clean air for all Arizonans. Please call on President Biden. Clean up toxic emissions and set limits on carbon pollution. Signed, Joanna Struther in Phoenix. My husband Raymond and I met on a blind date. 3 months later, his kidney unexpectedly failed, and I have walked alongside him on his patient journey ever since. My husband's life depends upon dialysis, the treatment that does what his kidney cannot do. Unfortunately, we confronted problems with our dialysis center that reflect larger trends caused by insufficient reimbursements from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Our nation is confronting a demographic crisis, with fewer working-aged people and more patients, which is why we are seeing worsening shortages of healthcare workers. CMS's reimbursements have been far below the inflation rate, which means providers will not be able to hire and keep necessary staff. For us, we see that dialysis centers simply cannot afford to hire nurses and therefore cannot afford to provide quality care. We need to improve the quality of care in all healthcare facilities throughout the country. Optimal care requires sufficient funding, and CMS is failing to meet the mark. I hope CMS recognizes the declining state of healthcare services in this country and decides to increase its reimbursements next year. Signed, Annalyn Scott of Levine. Well, we're at 45 minutes past the hour, so we better move on over to the entertainment section, and we'll begin by reading today's horoscopes. We will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you seeking to impress? You are in need of some extra TLC. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th. Do you have difficulty expressing what you desire? Moodiness hinders communication. Geminis, May 21st to June 21st birth dates. Are you aiming to please? You will go the distance to support your peers. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd. Are your emotions on display? Well, good luck hiding your feelings, because others can read you like a book. For Leos, July 23rd through August 22nd birth dates. Are you dreaming of an ideal lover? You hope love can provide an escape from reality. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Keep your standards high. For Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, are you trying to balance your needs with a loved one's needs? Whew, things are complicated. Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, is your head not in the game? Your focus is elsewhere. For Sagittarius, birth dates from November 22nd through December 21st, you want to know where your love interest stands. Are you wishing they would provide their loyalty? Capricorns, December 22nd to January 18th birth dates, are you expressing how you feel? The moon's clash with Venus is a recipe for oversharing. Mind your limits. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Are you trying to be helpful? Your best attempts fall flat. Don't get down on yourself. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. It is possible to have too much of a good thing. Are you overindulging? And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, I am a gay man who matched with another guy on a dating site 2 years ago this month. At first, we texted constantly. No one has ever made me feel the way he made me feel through texting alone. He displayed qualities that set him apart from anyone else I have talked to. We made a date, but he canceled at the last minute because of cold feet. He requested more time to get to know each other before meeting. For the past 2 years, we have continued to message each other, though not nearly as often. He says he very much wants to meet, but says he's intimidated by my accomplishments in life and is convinced I won't like him. Abby, he is more accomplished than most of the guys I date. I have tried desperately to convince him to meet me so that we may find out if we are a good match. In the meantime, I continue to date other guys because I want to find someone to share my life with. But I refuse to put my life on hold in a vain hope that we might meet someday. However, my desire to meet him overshadows most of my attempts to date others. His statements that he badly wants to meet me but is afraid to do so is incredibly frustrating. Should I block him from contacting me further? so that I might focus on looking for someone else? Or should I keep doing what I've been doing? Signed, Frustrated in Kentucky. Abby responds, Dear Frustrated, there may be a logical reason why this relationship has not progressed. The man with whom you are communicating may not at all be who he says he is. Because you have invested so much time and emotion in trying to meet him, offer him one more chance to meet. Tell him that if he cannot bring himself to do that, you are ending the relationship and will block him from contacting you further. And then follow through. Consider it to be taking a giant step forward in your life. You deserve better than the teasing you have been receiving. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, it seems that doctor's offices have it set up to automatically send you emails and or text messages to confirm your appointments. It is convenient, but they send them repeatedly, starting a week or two prior to the appointment. Why? It seems like overkill to me. Once should be enough, unless they feel we're unable to remember when we have an appointment. Before the internet, we made our next appointments, if required, at the doctor's office upon leaving, and we were given a card showing date and time. That was all we got. You marked it on your calendar at home, and life went on. Abby, do you agree with my frustration? Signed, Blunt Guy in Nevada. Dear Blunt Guy, no, I do not. Sometimes folks forget to enter that information into their calendar. And the result is that the medical and dental professionals get stood up. If the reminders become annoying, you can always delete them when they pop up. If this is your biggest problem, consider yourself lucky. And those were our letters of advice written to Abigail Van Buren. If you'd like to reach Abby, you can always go to her website, www.dearabby.com. And now, let's take a look at some comics. In the comic strip Zits, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borkman, in the first frame, Hector and Pierce, Jeremy's high school friends, are sitting around the kitchen table. The refrigerator door is open. There's hot sauce, Nutella. Hector is squirting some whipped cream into his mouth. Pierce is dripping peanut butter and jelly out of his sandwich onto the table. They look a mess. And Hector says to Jeremy, Dude, what if your mom comes home and sees her kitchen like this? And the next frame, they make fun of her, and Pierce goes, Oh, I bet she'd be like, Oh, my goodness. And Hector says, she would say, Heavens to Betsy. And then Jeremy does his impression of Mom in the next frame as Popeye. And he slams his fist and goes, Clean up this mess before I blank your blank. In the last frame, Pierce and Hector look kind of surprised, but they're doing the dishes as Jeremy says, as he puts the dishes away in the cabinet, and he says, You don't know my mom too well, do you? And that was Zits. In the comic strip Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg, Brian, and Neil Walker, in the first frame, Lieutenant Fuzz is sitting in the waiting room outside General Halftrack's office. Looks like he's playing on his tablet. Keeps going blip, blip, blip. And then the next frame, he sneezes, and then he coughs, and then he coughs. Then the next frame, he's snapping his fingers. And the next frame, he's kind of singing to himself, la 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 de dum de dum de dum. And the secretary is working at her desk. And so in the next to the last frame, she goes into General's office and says, Lieutenant Fuzz has been waiting for an hour, sir. And General Halftrack says, I know, I want him to suffer. And the last frame, she says to the general, But I'm the one who's suffering. And that was Beetle Bailey. In the comic strip Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, Dagwood and Mr. Dithers, his boss, are playing golf. And in the first frame, Mr. Dithers says, "Doggone it, I've played this course for years, and I always slice the ball into the rough." And Dagwood says, "Here's the ball, boss. What are you playing?" Mr. Dithers says, "The Power Brute True Flight. It also has my name stamped on it." And Dagwood says, "Well, this one has your name on it, but it's a Godzilla Solar Smack." In the next frame, Mr. Dithers takes the ball and says, "That's the ball I played all last summer. I'll play it today." Dagwood says, "Wait a minute, you can't play last year's ball today. You have to play the ball you hit today, boss." Well, in the next frame, Mr. Dithers is getting his putter out of the golf bag, and he says, "Son, let me explain how the game of golf is exactly like the game of life." And as he starts to putt, he says, "Tough luck if you can't make up the rules to benefit yourself as you go along." In the last frame, as Mr. Dithers is about to putt, Dagwood says, "Well, that sure doesn't seem very sportsmanlike." And Mr. Dithers, just as he's about to stroke the ball, says, "Also, if you don't stop mumbling while I'm hitting, I get to carry the ball to the next two holes." And that was Blondie. Well, before we go, we better say happy birthday to some celebrities. The actress Julie Christie turns 84 today. English artist Dave Gibbons turns 75. Actor John Shea turns 75. Actor Peter Capaldi turns 66. The actor Brad Garrett he turns 64. Actor Robert Carlyle turns 63. Actor Anthony Michael Hall turns 56. Actress Sarah Michelle Gellar turns 47 today. Singer Wynn Butler from Arcadia Fire Groups turns 44. Actor Skylar Samuels from The Gifted turns 30. And actress Abigail Breslin turns 28 today. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I hope you have a great day today. I hope you have a great week. Bye-bye.